This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. Representative Kevin Brady from Texas is the top Republican on the House and Ways Committee, Means Committee. About trade, he has this to say. Given China's economic aggression throughout the world, I think the president's moratorium on free trade agreements hurts America's economy and weakens our influence throughout the world. The House is not clearly in the Republican control, but it is likely. So we welcome our colleague, Alan Tonelson, who blogs independently at Reality Check about trade and manufacturing, to comment on what can we expect from a Republican-controlled House in the second half of the Biden first term. Alan, a very good evening to you. Kevin Brady's remark is fertile, but at the same time requires interpretation. What is it that the Republicans will recommend, presuming they're in a position in the House to influence the president? Good evening to you.
Hi, John, and hi, Gordon. One thing we really have to keep in mind when we're judging remarks from folks like Kevin Brady, who is, of course, the outgoing ranking Republican on the House Ways and Means Committee, is that he's always been a stalwart and champion of the corporate offshoring lobby. And like many mainstream Republicans, because of the major advances made in Republican voting ranks by more populist positions, including on trade policy, and of course, especially on China policy, he's had to keep pretty quiet these last few years. But clearly, he still harbors the ambition that more offshoring friendly trade deals could possibly be cobbled together if the new Congress has enough so-called mainstream Republicans, or let's say old-style mainstream Republicans, plus corporate-friendly Democrats. I think that's really wishful thinking, largely because the Democratic Party on trade policy is still heavily influenced by labor union positions, and labor unions hate new free trade agreements. And it looks like you're going to have in House Republican ranks in that caucus at least as many so-called MAGA-style Republicans who also hate these kind of standard trade agreements than we had in the previous Congress. So, again, I think we're hearing a little wishful thinking from Kevin Brady, who I think is also wrong substantively on the idea that you need new free trade agreements in order to contain China's growing power and growing global influence.
Gordon, you have a question for Alan.
Alan, before you can have free trade agreements, as a practical matter at least, you probably need trade promotion authority, which has lapsed. What do you think the chances of a TPA are?
That's really the big test that stances like Mr. Brady's are going to face. And I don't think the chances are really very good at all. And one major reason is not only those political considerations that I just mentioned, but the economy, it seems quite clear, is going to weaken over the next few months and possibly fall into recession. And a weaker economy is never a good recipe for making progress for that standard free trade standard trade agreements policy. And I don't see any sign that Mr. Biden or many of his Democratic colleagues view that so-called fast track authority, which enables trade agreements to be passed by Congress through expedited procedures, I don't see any sign that it's a high priority at all.
Alan, let's speak more than manufacturing. Agricultural base of the U.S., does free trade in some fashion enliven the farm belt in the U.S., or is it neutral?
Free trade has been enthusiastically supported by U.S. farmers, especially in those crop areas that receive major subsidies. But I think they're having their reservations also because so many of them have become so reliant on a Chinese market for which they had extremely high hopes, but that's proven to be extremely unreliable.
Gordon, you have a question.
Alan, given all the problems for trade agreements in the Congress and all the problems at the World Trade Organization and all of the difficulties that we have seen with these global supply chains, are we now in a period of deglobalization?
I think there's no question that the era of what's been called hyperglobalization that lasted roughly from the mid-1990s until, let's say, 2020, when that pandemic spread from China all around the world. And I do think that there has been some deglobalization that's taken place. What's still unclear to me is how far that process is going to go, because so much of that deglobalization, especially when you're talking about global supply chains, is due to the fact that we've had COVID-related snags and COVID-related bottlenecks that have been roiling those networks for roughly 2 years now. At some point, presumably, the pandemic really does end. Those supply chain snags do start to unwind. And the question is, and it's still very unclear to me, is the extent to which companies will learn the lesson that they'd taken too many risks and extended those supply chains too broadly. I think there are reasons to think that they will pull in their horns more, that they will reshore more production closer to home, but it's still unclear to what extent.
Alan, the Biden administration is union friendly. Can we establish that fact? Does that give them maneuvering room that would not be necessary, that would not always be true, to go forward with free trade negotiations and to work with Republicans to establish a positive agenda in these next 2 years?
The main reason to believe that that's possible is that that kind of coalition building, bipartisan coalition building, was in evidence when President Trump managed to reach the final USMCA trade agreement, the rewrite of NAFTA that governs our trade with Mexico and Canada. That final version got pretty broad and pretty enthusiastic backing from both sides of the aisle. The main question is whether or not the USMCA formula can be replicated with, for example, the countries of East Asia, whether they will be as amenable to the much tougher labor conditions, the much tougher environmental conditions, and the U.S. content standards that were contained in that USMCA and which wound up attracting so much bipartisan support.
Gordon, we have a minute. Go ahead.
So, Alan, just to go back to USMCA for a moment, in just a few seconds, how would you judge USMCA? Has it been a success or has it been a disappointment?
I think it's been a little too soon to tell, primarily because it was only in effect for a very short time until COVID struck. And once again, the real acid test would be the extent to which U.S. trade has become more concentrated inside North America. And because of that COVID effect, because there has been that so-called friendshoring effect, that nearshoring effect, it's still not apparent to me how much USMCA's terms have had to do with it.
Alan Tonelson is an independent economic policy analyst. He blogs at Reality Check. And Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, writing at Gatestone, Newsweek, and The Hill. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.